Okay, good morning, guys. First of all, thank you so much for having me here. Can you hear without the mic? Is it okay without the microphone? Fantastic. It's really an honor and a privilege to be with you and to be here this morning and to be part of the beginning of this amazing Shabbos, the Shabbaton, on Simcha, on joy. And to tell you the truth, having just toured your campus, I don't know how you can't be besimcha coming here every day. That extraordinary gym, these incredible classrooms, the cutting-edge campus, a tribute to your amazing administration, to your incredible teachers. I want to thank Rabbi Safran for having me, inviting me, and for giving me this tour to see his passion and his enthusiasm and his drive to bring out the best in every one of you. You have every reason to be so happy. And Rabbi Schreiber, for making all the arrangements, thank you so much for the opportunity to be with you this morning. Happiness or joy. Who doesn't want to be happy? Every day you wake up, and among our first goals of the day, even if it's subconscious, it's not spoken, is we want to go to sleep that night happy. We want to feel fulfilled, satisfied, gratified. We want to have enjoyed our day. This is one of the principles our founding fathers gave us. The American right and entitlement is to live in a world in which we have the pursuit of happiness. But it's as if the founding fathers were making an admission that we will pursue happiness our whole life. We're chasing it. We're running after it. We want it so badly. But we're always pursuing it. Note, the founding fathers didn't say you have the right to be happy. They said you have the right to what? Pursue happiness. What does it mean if you're pursuing something? If you're running after it and you can't catch up to it, what does it mean about it? It's running away from you. And all you have to do is look at the crazy world in which we're living in today, and you see that despite the progress we've made in technology and in medicine, despite the ease of living life, I have a friend who likes to show off on his new Tesla that he can, from his phone, press the Tesla app, and if it's raining outside, he doesn't have to get wet going to the car. You press a button on the phone, and the Tesla pulls right up to you. Self-driving car pulls right up to you. Hopefully he doesn't run over anyone on the way. It doesn't knock into the building or knock over your house, which has happened, but not when he's shown it to me. So we're living in a world where you push a button on your phone and your car picks you up. And yet, there's more anxiety, there's more depression, more people on medication, undergoing therapy. And we know it among ourselves. We know it among young people, maybe young people especially. The growth of anxiety and sadness and hopelessness. And people filling that vacuum and filling that void and turning to all kinds of things because they want to be happy. So some people are turning towards juuling. Some people are turning towards addictive, endless binge-watching of silliness. Some people fill the void by living vicariously through sports or other people, but what it has in common is we just want to be happy. And when we live our lives with all of its opportunity and pleasure, and yet, despite that, we're still not happy, we have to numb ourselves to the fact that we're not happy and the effort to try to find it. The Harvard psychologist Daniel Gilbert, he wrote a book called Stumbling on Happiness, and he argues that the truth is you can't find happiness even if you're trying. It's elusive, it's running away. And the only way to really be happy is to stumble upon it, to find that thing, that niche, to find that lifestyle, to find those opportunities or those things that will make you happy. You can't really be happy, you can only stumble upon it. So I want to share with you three quick ideas this morning that help me try to lead a happier life. That when I'm feeling down or nervous or anxious or worried, overwhelmed, I think about these three things, these three methods, three strategies for how to be happy in life nonetheless. Number one, and this one is, I think, the most important, and it is happiness is not an emotion. If you take nothing else from what I say, and the theme of your Shabbaton, this incredible Yule weekend, is that happiness is not an emotion. Stop waiting to be happy. Stop thinking happiness is going to fall upon you or come upon you. Happiness is not an emotion. What is it? It's a decision that you make. And how do you make the decision to be happy? It's in this week's parsha. Esav and Yaakov have the long-awaited reunion. After years, decades of alienation and separation, Yaakov is anxious. He's a little bit nervous. We know the three-pronged approach he takes in anticipation of meeting with his brother Esav. But finally, they connect, and it goes better than he could have imagined. He didn't need the war, and the prayers are being paid off, and the diplomacy seems to have worked. But when they meet each other, and they say, hey, Shalom Aleichem, what's going on? How are you? What's happening? How's it been? Who are all these people? What are all these things? They have a brief exchange. And Yaakov says, how are you, Esav? What's going on, brother? What's all this? And he says, you know, Yeshli Rav, I have a lot. I'm pretty happy, somewhat happy, because Yeshli Rav, my house is nice, it's decent. The cars, it's okay. Could have better, more. My clothing could be more expensive or stylish. I could have more money in the bank. I have a lot, says Esav. It's not bad. Yeshli Rav. But Yaakov turns to him when Esav asks him, how's it going for you? What's happening in your life? And what does Yaakov say? Yeshli? Kol. And I may live in South Florida, but I'm still an enormous Yankee fan. So the rest of Major League says Yeshli Rav, but Yankee fans can now say Yeshli Kol. Garrett Cole, Baruch Hashem, is going to take us home next year. We are the disciples of Yaakov. The Yankees are the progeny of Yaakov Avinu. That the rest of our enemies, the Red Sox, can say Yeshli Rav. But the Yankees now say Yeshli Kol. How can Yaakov say Yeshli Kol? That word Kol means I have everything. I have everything. How can a person say, I have everything? Did he have everything? He had a lot of tzaras. We know later, Bikesh Yaakov Leshev B'Shalva, by next week's parsha, Yaakov is already saying, give me something. I just want some peace and quiet. And yet, when he reunites with Esav, he says, Yeshli Kol, I've got it all. Where did he get that from? Where did he get that from? You know where he got it from. Because you say it every day, or at least every time you eat bread. You're going to say it tonight, after the Shabbos meal. Bakol mikol kol, the end of benching. Where do those words come from, the end of benching? Bakol mikol kol. The answer is they come from Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Avram at the end of his life, Vashem Beirach is Avram, bakol. God blessed Avram, bakol, with everything. And there's, some say he had a son, some say he had a daughter. Some say he had money and reputation, and he had power. The Ibn Ezra, Sfarn, all the Mefarshim weigh in. What does it mean, Yeshli Kol? He just lost his wife. He lost his everything. He lost everything. You know, Avram lives 38 years after Sarah dies, but we know nothing about his life from then. We hear nothing from him or about him, because once he loses Sarah, he's done. He's finished. He lost his everyone. And that's exactly when the Torah testifies that God blessed Avram Bakol. He had everything. And then Avram took that Bakol, and Yitil Yitzchak is Kol Asher Lo. He gave to Yitzchak the Kol Asher Lo, his kol, his everything he had. And then this week Yaakov says, Yeshli kol, and that's the bakol, mikol, kol. You know what it meant that Avram had everything? It meant he made the decision to live his life that whatever I have is what I need. Whatever I have is what's right for me. You see, there's two ways we can look at life. We could define our happiness by what we don't have. If only I had the newer iPhone. If only my parents had more money and I can shop in the more expensive stores. If only I went out to eat more often, or I could order a drink when we went out. If only I had other parents or different siblings or could go to that other camp. If only, if only, if only. And if we define our happiness by if only, by what we don't have, then my friends, you will never, ever be happy. Because you know what? There's always more you could have. No matter what you have, there's something yet more you could have. I love to read the Forbes 400 every year. It's entertaining for me. I'm always curious to see if any names I recognize, anyone I even know. The 400 wealthiest people in America put out an edition every year. And it's fascinating who fell off and who came on, and is it self-made, or did they earn that money? And I always think, like number two or three, how about number 400? I think to qualify this year on the list, you had to have, I think it was $2.5 or $3 billion. Number 400 had like $3 billion. So the question is, whoever joined the list this year at 400, I think with their $3 billion, you understand what $3 billion is? You couldn't spend it if you tried $3 billion. The return, if you leave that money in a bank on $3 billion a year, is more than you could spend a year. So you think whoever joined at number 400 was dancing the kazatska in the street saying, I am the luckiest person on earth, I have everything? Or did they say, 400, it's not bad, it's a good start. But until I get to number one, Yeshli Rav, I have a lot, but I don't have everything. There are people in the Forbes 400 who feel like they don't have enough. And there are people in my community and in yours who are on Tomchei Shabbos who are relying on handouts and help from other to be able to put food on their table, and they have an attitude and a smile on their face of Yeshli Kol, I have everything I need. I know such people. Maybe you don't. But I have access to who needs the most help. And you know, some of them, despite how much help and support they need, despite how vulnerable they are, how fragile their lives, they make the choice to feel, I have everything. And if you have everything, you can be happy. So the question is, are we disciples? Are we descendants of Esav or of Yaakov? Do we walk through our lives with an attitude of Yeshli Rav? You know, it's not bad what I have. It's not bad my phone and my clothing and my friends and the camp I go to and the house I live in and the car my parents drive. It's not bad. Yeshli Rav, I guess I have a lot. But I could always have more, and if only I had that more, I'd be happy. If only I got into that school, did well on that test, or could get into that crowd, if only I had more, I'd be happy. Or are we descendants of Yaakov Avinu, that Yeshli Kol, I have everything. Because whatever I have is what I meant to have. So if my happiness is defined by what I don't have, I'll never be happy because there's always more. But if my happiness is determined by what I have, then I can always be happy because I always have something. So what do we focus on? What are we looking at? Where is our attention? Happiness is a decision, not an emotion. Stop waiting for it to happen to you and start waking up and making that decision that I'm going to be happy. I'm going to focus on what I have. I'm going to keep a gratitude journal. There are countless apps today and opportunities to keep a gratitude journal every day and not go to sleep at night without realizing, wow, I have so much to be grateful for. And if you keep a gratitude journal in your life, you can't help but realize and feel a sense of happiness. Stop looking at what others have. Social media, I engage it, I use it, I try to take the best out of what technology has to offer. But social media can be a blessing if it connects you with others and enables you to be happy and to share your happiness. And it's a curse if you're trying to live your life simultaneously to so many others. Snapchat is a poison. It is an absolute poison because you know like I do, it's hard enough to live our own lives. But now I've got to live my life and also watch what you had for dessert and the clothing that you're wearing when you went on vacation, how you feel about the Shabbaton, or whether your flight was delayed, or whether you got stuck at a red light, or whether your little sister puked all over the floor. It's hard enough to live our own lives, but to live the lives of all of my friends in real time and simultaneously, and I'm never fully present with whatever I'm doing because I constantly have to tap and see what you're up to. And you know, whatever the other people are posting does not represent or reflect their real life. It's the life they want to lead. It's an illusion of the life they want you to believe they have. So stop feeling FOMO for what they have and start feeling JOMO. You know what JOMO is? You don't know what FOMO is? Am I so old that FOMO's already outdated, or is it just that FOMO didn't make its way to the West Coast? What's FOMO? The fear of missing out. Because you will live on social media and you're following other people's lives, then you have this fear of missing out. Where are they and what are they doing and what's happening and what do they have? And I really need to be there, but I also need to be there, but I also need to be there. The opposite of FOMO is JOMO. It's the joy of missing out. It's the geschmack of missing out. It's, you know what? You go live your life and you do your thing because Yeshli Kol, I have everything I need. Whoever I'm with right now, whatever I'm doing, and whatever I have is what I meant to have. Yeshli Kol, I have everything. So number one is be a descendant of Yaakov, not Esav. Be a fan of the Yankees, not the Red Sox. And have an attitude of Yeshli Kol. I have everything I need. Stop waiting to feel happy and make the decision to be happy. Plaster a smile on your face. You know something amazing? You know, we have many gedolim who've said that your face is a reshus harabim. Your face is part of the public sphere. You're not entitled to walk around miserable and fabisana and negative and anxious and worried. Your face belongs to the public. And we've had that part of our Masoda, our tradition forever, but science has caught up. And another researcher named Nicholas Christakis did a study. You ever notice that we don't have to try this now, but if somebody yawns, have you noticed that yawning is contagious? It's been scientifically proven. All right, I guess we could try it now. One person yawns, not acting, but a real yawn, and you will see it'll kick off a string of people yawning. So Christakis proved that the same is true as smiling. Do you know that when a person smiles, it's contagious, and it makes other people smile too? The muscles in our face. When we smile, the muscles that are engaged also speak to the brain, which releases endorphins, which brings us a high. When you smile, you're happy. So let me tell you something. It's the opposite of the way you think. Stop waiting to be happy and then you'll smile. Start smiling more often and you'll find that you feel happy. That you feel happy. Smile more often and more people will smile with you. The word sameach or simcha is sam moach. It's place your brain and your thoughts. It's what you choose to think about. Stop waiting to feel happy and make the decision to be happy. Yeshli kol. Number two. Many people think, you know, happy? I'd be happy. Just give me the things I want and I'll be happy. If I'm a taker, I can be happy. But I'll tell you, paradoxically, the biggest obstacle to happiness is our own pursuit of it. When we're chasing happiness and we're trying to live selfishly to fill our needs and to do what we want and what we think brings us pleasure, we end up being less happy. Just look at the world. How many celebrities and athletes and superstars and influencers have everything that we usually think would define happiness? Money, power, fame, status, and yet, how many are so miserable? Every day you look at the news and someone else has checked themselves into rehab, has overdosed, God forbid. Because when you accomplish, when you achieve, when you get all those things that you thought if only I would have them, I'd be happy, and yet you're still not happy. Now you're in trouble. So the truth is, happiness doesn't come from receiving. It actually comes from the opposite, from giving. I know it's only Hanukkah time. I'll tell you an amazing Rambam in Hilchos Purim, in Hilchos Megillah. The Rambam says, if I have a limited amount of money, and I can spend it either to enhance my seuda, my beautiful Purim meal, buy a finer cut of corned beef, get a higher rated wine, or I can spend that money from Matanos Lavionim to give it to other people, where should I spend the money? And the Rambam says what we would think is the obvious conclusion. Spend more on Matanos Lavionim, help the people around you. That's obvious. You know what's not obvious? The Rambam gives a reason why. I would think the Rambam would say, because that's the generous, magnanimous thing to do. If you have, share with others. Give to those who are less fortunate. That's not what the Rambam writes. You know what he says? Purim is the holiday of Mishenich Nesanda Marben Be Simcha. Purim's the holiday of happiness. So the Rambam says, you know what's going to make you happier? If you have $100 to spend, and you can either spend it on yourself or on someone else, you know which one's going to make you happier? Spending it on someone else. And again, the research has shown, they've done studies where they give people money and they drop them at the mall and they say, one group you buy things for yourself, another group go buy something that you're going to gift for others, and then they measure health, mental health, well-being. And always, consistently, do you know which one makes you healthier and happier? Not when you spend on yourself, when you spend on others. Happiness is the result not of being a taker. Happiness is the result of being a giver. Happiness doesn't come from selfishness. It comes from selflessness. I counsel people all the time who are struggling and going through a hard time, who are down in the dumps, and I say, volunteer. You got to go out and volunteer. You got to give. You got to do. You got to care. You got to extend beyond just yourself. And so the second approach to happiness, strategy for happiness, is to stop thinking that happiness will come when you get more and realize that happiness will come when you give more. I'm sure you have participated here in Yachad or Chai Lifeline, Chesed projects of the school itself. You don't feel on fire when you come home, when you've done something good, when you volunteered, when you've changed someone's life, when you care about someone else. It doesn't bring out the best in you. It doesn't make you feel alive. It doesn't put a smile on your face that is better than whatever gift you could have received. So number one is Yeshli Kol. Happiness is a decision. It's not an emotion. Number two, happiness comes from giving, not from getting. And lastly, and with this we'll end, number three. I'll tell you a story from a few summers ago. I'd always wanted to go skydiving. I always only wanted to do it in Israel. Anyone here ever jumped out of an airplane? No one? You don't know what you're missing. Next Shabbaton, Rabbi. Always wanted to jump out of a plane. The only place I ever wanted to do it was in Israel. I figured if it didn't work out, at least I'd be in the place where I want to spend eternity. So I didn't tell my wife, but we were in Israel as a family one summer, and the place you can go skydiving is called Chof HaBonim near Haifa. And I just said to her, you know, I don't know what we're going to do with the kids today. Let's pack the car. Let's go for a drive towards the north, towards Haifa, above Haifa's beautiful areas. And then on the way, I said, we just have to make a quick detour. We're going to stop here. My wife said to me, why? Where are we going? So I had to come clean. I said, you know, I've always wanted to go skydiving. This is the place to do it. And it's never worked out. And I'll tell you why I have the coolest wife in the world. Is that she didn't give me a hard time. And she didn't say, what are you, crazy? And she didn't say, not now. You know what she said? Wait 1 second. Why is that fair that you get to do it? I want to do it too. So we left our kids on the ground. And my wife and I got into this rickety old plane. And if you weren't crazy for jumping out of the plane, you were out of your mind for getting in that plane. And the plane just zigzags until it climbs and climbs and climbs and gets to 15,000, 18,000 feet in the air, the number you need to be when you're ready to jump out. All the people who had paid an insane amount of money to do an insane activity were in the airplane, and you scoot forward, and you swing, they open the side of the door, and your legs are hanging off the edge of the airplane. You know when you're on an airplane, you look out the window, the captain comes on, he says, we're beginning our initial descent. Start putting your chair forward, your tray table up. And you look down and people are little dots and you can't really make headway of anything. That's the height that we were. When my legs were dangling off the side of the plane and I looked down and I thought, I'm out of my mind. But before you can have second thoughts and turn around, you get a push on your back. And the next thing you know, you're flying face first towards Mother Earth at 100 miles an hour. I'm pretty sure I tasted my spleen. You can't imagine the feeling. You cannot imagine the feeling. The fear, the worry, the anxiety. What's going to be and what's going to happen and will this work out and will I ever see my children again? And what was I thinking and why did I do this? I literally couldn't breathe. I was hyperventilating 100 miles an hour towards Earth and there's no room for error. At all. And it was the most miserable few moments of my life. And I thought to myself, why in the world did I do this? And then, all of a sudden, I had a thought. All of a sudden, I realized something. See, I'm not crazy. I didn't jump out of an airplane by myself. It was a tandem jump. I was attached to a guy behind me. There was a guy who teaches Tzanchanim in the Israeli army, who jumps out of a plane 8 times a day, and we were buckled together in a tandem dive. And the moment I remembered that someone who knows what they're doing has my back, I let go and I was able to enjoy the ride. The moment I remembered that I'm not in control and I'm not in charge, there's someone who has my back who knows what they're doing, and that everything's going to be okay, was the moment I let go. And I stopped hyperventilating, and I stopped chewing on my liver and kidneys, and I started to be able to enjoy the glorious ride down to the ground. He pulled the chute, and you sit up in the harness, and now you got about 8 minutes of the most beautiful view of Israel you've ever seen. He let me control the parachute, and you go out over the water, and you come back over the land, and you coast to the ground, the most beautiful ride you've ever had. And when we landed, I thought to myself, you know, what a metaphor for life. We're on this ride called life, and sometimes we're hyperventilating. You got 3 tests coming up. Maybe you're taking the SATs. You're trying to get into that yeshiva in Israel. You want to get into that college. Maybe you're trying to break in with those friends, or you're trying to make that basketball team. Maybe, who knows what's causing the anxiety and the worry in you. And you're hyperventilating, and you can't breathe. And it's the most miserable time. And that's when, if you want simcha, you have to stop and realize there's someone who has our back who knows what they're doing. And if you let go, you can enjoy the ride. In the recovery community and world, in the AA movement, 12-step movement, they have a language. They say, let go and let God. Let go. The tighter you grip something, the more miserable you are the moment you let go. If you play an instrument, you know the tighter you hold it, you can't play it well. If you play golf, you know the tighter you hold the club, the greater the chance you're going to be in the water or the woods. In sports, in music, and in life, the tighter you hold on, the worse you will do. And if you let go and you let God, you can enjoy the ride and you can coast to a place of happiness. And so the third suggestion is to let go and let God. Emuna. We have this incredible blessing in our lives. We all have access to the King of Kings. He's in our life. Talk to Him. Thank Him. Ask Him for help. Protest and object to the things you wish and hope He would do differently. We have this incredible blessing of a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And at that moment when we start to hyperventilate, the moment that we're gripping too tight, take that deep breath. Take a deep breath. You know the word, how do you say breath in Hebrew? Nishima is the same word as neshama. Because if you want to make contact with your soul, you got to breathe deep. Take a deep breath and restore your soul and realize I have to let go and let God. Let go and enjoy the ride because He has a master plan and He always knows what He's doing and He's ready. So my good friends, enjoy the incredible Shabbaton that you have planned for you. Employ these three strategies and you'll find the happiness. You won't have to pursue it. You'll finally catch up with it and you'll experience it. Number one, happiness is a decision, not an emotion. Yeshli kol, not yeshli rav. Number two, happiness is the result not of receiving, but happiness is the result of giving. Do for others. Be generous and kind and volunteer and show up and it'll make you happy. And number three, let go and let God. Realize the big man upstairs has our back. You have nothing to worry about. Let go and enjoy the ride. Thank you very much.